Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life.
And we're back.
Yeah, Jeremy came up with this great idea. He wanted to talk about Millennium Blades. Have you heard of it?
I have, yeah. I've played it.
Let me tell you about... You want me to tell you about Millennium Blades?
Yeah, please. Why don't you tell everybody what we're talking about.
Okay, so in a nutshell, Millennium Blades is a collector's card game simulator. Now, by being a simulator, you don't have to go out and buy booster packs. So everything's self-contained in this one box, like Thunderstone or Dominion or Legendary. It's just you buy the box, that's the game. But it's a collector's card game simulator because all of the different sets are part of this 1,000-year-old game within the game called Millennium Blades. And you are a pro player of this game, and you must buy booster packs and fuse your cards to get all the best cards and make a deck so you can win the tournament and be the coolest, best player in all of Millennium Bladia, or wherever this takes place.
So who's responsible for this game? What's tell us about the company?
So yeah, it's produced by Level 99 Studios by David B. Tolton. He's, if you don't recognize the name, he's famous for coming out with Battlecon and Pixel Tactics, as well as several other games. Yeah, so this is his new game that just came out, and it was kickstarted maybe last year, and it was just released a few months ago, but they sold out at a distributor level within 48 hours.
Wow, so there's nothing in stores. You'd have to have been a Kickstarter backer to actually receive it?
Yeah. So they were going to ship some out retail. So a lot of stores kickstarted it. Online stores like Cool Stuff Inc. and Miniature Market, they also had some, but they sold out. Wow. And then they bought directly through Level 99 store, and they sold out. So there's none left.
Wow. So why don't we go through kind of how the game is played? You know, what you're dealing with. If there's dice or cards or kind of, you know, just the process of it. What are the kind of phases of the game, and how do the players play?
Okay, I can tell you about that, but I was just wondering first, I told you a little bit about this game, and we played it not too long ago, and I was wondering, what did you think the game was going to be like before you actually played it?
Right. Yeah, well, when you said it was a collectible card game simulator, it seemed like we would mostly be dealing with the business and the market, you know, the purchasing boxes, opening packs, you know, the aftermarket reselling. And I didn't even know if there would actually be, you know, card combat or you know, what we would be doing. But I was pleasantly surprised that it's a very balanced game because you have those two phases. You're kind of deck building and then actually competing. You're actually, in combat with the other players as you would be in a tournament of, you know, Pokemon or Yu-Gi-Oh! Or something. And so that was a pleasant surprise because I was worried that it would only be the business side, or the simulation of the how to make money with value with ultra rare cards.
Yeah, total Euro.
Right. Yes.
It's a European simulator of a collector's card game. And it has a lot of that, though. It does have a lot of that economy and money management, because you're like buying cards, you're selling cards, you're fusing cards for other cards. But I think, although some strategies are to get a lot of money in the deck building phase, the ultimate strategy is to make a good deck to win you tournaments. So the first we played a pre-release first, which is a tournament, but usually the first phase is a deck building phase. You have your store and you have your auction, and you start off with this starter deck, and then everyone's given 6 cards from the top of the store deck, so you have like these booster packs. So, and it's played in real time. It takes place over 20 minutes. It's real time. And as soon as that timer starts, you're just looking at those cards, at those 6 cards, and you get $30. And you're like, okay, what am I going to do with these cards here? And you try to think of a strategy. And then you just start buying cards from the store. You sell cards you don't need to get more money. And you fuse cards to get special promos, depending on your strategy.
Yeah, I like that very much, that the budget that you had and everything was very much like a kid's budget. Like, that would be how much, you know, disposable income he would have, you know, in a month or a week. And so the price and levels of everything felt very much like a kid in a card store.
Yeah, sometimes. Some of those cards get expensive. Right. I mean, they are, the money is represented in wads. So it's not just $1. It's like one wad of cash.
Right, right.
So I guess, I don't know. I played a little bit of Magic, but I never got into the whole buying singles aspect of it. I think that's when I kind of got out originally, because, you know, I was a kid in junior high at the time, and you know, this other kid, his parents were able to buy them this really powerful, expensive card,
right?
And he was able to use it, and then I don't know, he lost it somewhere, and his parents got really mad at our group. They're like, you're gambling in here. Someone took his card, and you know, the kids are just like, it's a card. You know, they don't know.
Right.
Sorry, tangent. You ever play Magic?
Yeah, I did. Kind of university a little bit. Yeah, and I didn't. And no sleeves, no nothing. Just kind of randomly with some coworkers, and that's about it.
That's pretty cool. That's a fun way to get into it. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I know we know a few tournament level players, but I never did that. I never got involved in any tournaments.
I'd love to these days,
but it's not as easy to do, and I don't want to go out and buy tons of cards, but maybe this Millennium Blades can give me that whole tournament feel.
Yes. Yeah, so why don't you talk about a little bit about the mechanics of the game, or the phases, or kind of how, you know, how it's played, to spell that out for people. And
sure. So after the deck building phase, you clear your board, you remove everything from the store and the auction. During the deck building phase, some meta cards are revealed, and you have an element and a type. So there's different types of cards, and they each have an element and a type. Like, maybe it's a soldier, an heir, or something like that. And it has a star value. Higher star value is usually more powerful, and they sell for more money. So when this element or type is revealed, you kind of want to include those cards in your deck, because they will gain you more points in the tournament for kind of going towards the meta. And as soon as the deck building phase is finished, after the last timer, there's three timers, 7, 7, and 6. 6 is like kind of get your deck together, finish your collection, like you're getting collections together of a certain type so you can sell it on eBay and make money. And then you start the tournament phase. And in the tournament phase, you have one deck box, 2 accessories, and 8 singles. Like, you're not building a whole deck, you're just building a deck of 8 single cards. So in the deck building phase, you're buying booster packs. When you buy a booster pack, it's one card. So basically, it's been abstracted that this one card, this booster pack, this is the one good card in it, and this is the one you keep. You kind of throw all the others out. And then you have a deck box, and that deck box represents all the other cards, all the common cards. So that's like your general theme for your deck.
Yeah. So how's the tournament played? Like,
well, so it's a pretty simple game for the most part, and it's just basically you put your deck box and your 2 accessories there. Sometimes your accessories are ways to protect you from your opponents, and then you have a tableau, and in your tableau you have 6 slots to put cards. You have 8 cards altogether, and it's abstracted. It's like you have a whole deck, but these are your 8 best cards. And you play them one at a time in the leftmost spot. And when you play them, they'll say things like, play, flip a card. So when you play that, you'll flip another card in your tableau. And maybe if you flip a card, it'll do something special for you, because it'll like say, flip, gain 30 points. You kind of build this strategy by playing cards, flipping cards, and some of the cards have actions on them, where if you play an action, you can say, okay, I'm going to use this action, and then you flip that card because you've used that action. Mm-hmm. So when you flip a card, you can't flip it back. So some cards are face up, some cards are face down, and you're trying to score ranking points, which is called RP. And by doing these plays, you score ranking points, and whoever has the most ranking points at the end of the tournament wins. And you have different victory points for first, second, third, fourth, and fifth. Mm. And they get tallied up with the points that you earned during dex building phase, as well as the points you earned by just collecting money and stuff like that, or friendship points.
Right.
Yeah.
So the order you play the cards in your deck has a lot to do with how they interact and how you accumulate.
That's the most difficult part, because you're sitting there trying to figure out what order to play it. And you mess up a lot. And that's one of the rules of this game, is if you make a mistake, there is no take backs, because it's a dexterity and a mental stamina type of game where it's like...
Right. Yeah, and so the mistakes are kind of part of the gameplay and part of the fun, because you do something that you thought was going to be a winning move and it actually has no effect, so you're just kind of stuck. Yeah.
Happens to me all the time. I did that the other day, and I'm just like, no! And Chris is there like, no tape backs! It's in the rules! But there's also cards like that flip opponent's cards, or there's cards that say top, and basically that's like an ongoing effect until your next turn. And those can kind of influence your opponents or your play style. And it kind of can throw you for a loop, because you had this plan and someone played that card and it's like, dang, now I can't play any cards that are 5-star value.
Right, right.
So, yeah. And, you got it. You played it.
Yes.
So, what did you think?
I thought it was very fun. And I liked the fact, and maybe... I don't know if this was a symptom of it being the very first time I played, or if the game itself kind of tries to keep you off balance, because there's so much to read and so many interactions between different cards and so many things you're trying to plan. And it being the phases being in real time made it very interesting, because you're kind of panicked and you're kind of cobbling together the best possible combination with what's available. And as you're buying cards from the store, you know, they're face down. So you're buying things, you're spending your money, but you're not knowing if it's going to be anything useful. So yeah, that was very enjoyable. And I don't know, you know, through further plays, if that feeling is maintained, but I really enjoyed that aspect of it, is that you weren't a master of this card game and you weren't in control and kind of looking for the cards that were going to work the best. You were just doing the best you could. And that had a fun, you know, the anxiety of that and the real time base trading was really fun. Yeah,
there's a lot of analysis paralysis, and you're just glazing over because just you have all these different cards that do different things, and you're just trying to think, what is my strategy? How am I going to win this? What are my opponents going to be doing?
Right, right.
You know, so and it's your first time. We used the recommended setup for the first time, and it's honestly the second time I've done the recommended setup. And even then, I still didn't really know exactly what I was doing, but I definitely had a better idea, because I knew the different sets that were in there kind of what they did in a way. Mm-hmm. But the cards I was dealt, since you have this big store deck, like, yeah, you have your... I had a different starter deck, and that these starter decks are... They're kind of your general theme, at least for the first tournament. Because each starter deck, there's 6 of them, each starter deck does kind of a certain thing. They have a certain play style, whether it is to just kind of score all the points at the end, or maybe score points based off of other cards that you've played, or score points by flipping all of your cards.
Right.
You know, they do different things. So if you get tossed a random starter deck that you haven't played before, you're going to be playing a different strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get 6 cards off the top of the deck, plus 3 at the start of the game. What are those cards going to be, and how are they going to fit into your strategy? And even if you're using the same sets, like that's a massive store deck, you're bound to be seeing new possibilities, even within the same setup.
Right, right. And even if you know there's something out there that would help you very much, the odds of getting it may not be that good, because you're actually dealing with a lot of cards, and you'll have to work your way through a really large store deck to get to get something you want.
Yeah. Usually you just kind of pick something and just roll with it, man.
So what's the store deck comprised of? It's the core set, and then how many expansions or how many of the additional sets are included in a game?
All right, so there's different series of cards. There's right. different rarities, and you have your core cards, mm-hmm. which could they're core, but they're kind of a variety of all the different sets mm-hmm. for the most part. And then you add 5 expansion sets, 4 premium sets, and 3 master sets, and you mix them all together.
Oh, wow.
And the master sets are going to be the most expensive. Mm-hmm. The core are the cheapest. And then you have your fusion piles, which you have bronze, silver, and gold mm-hmm. fusion piles. So you can get those. And then you also have your prize support, where you pick another bronze and another silver. You don't use all the cards in the box. You just kind of... I made randomizers, so I mm-hmm. just kind of can do a random setup. But there's still a lot more possibilities on how they can go together, of course. You know, if you've ever played Thunderstone or Dominion... You just do a random setup, the different sets that you include really change the game.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, so basically in the deck building phase, you're buying from the store, buying blindly, random cards. You know basically what would be included in that set and the kind of probability of an element that you might need. And then you're also looking at the aftermarket, which is the auction, other cards that people have discarded. But in that action, and you're also spending your sell tokens, so you're allowed to you're only allowed to perform a certain number of transactions during each deck building phase, and then there's also fusing, right? Did we talk about
a little bit about fusing? Fusing is basically there's like if you take 5 random cards, you fuse them into a bronze card.
Right. Yeah. So similar to like
and they're removed from the game.
Right. Like mobile game kind of card playing. That concept.
So I'm really excited. I actually, last game day, I told you I played the same setup with you
yes.
twice. And the last game day, I brought a completely new setup. And I played with Chris and Neil. I don't know if you ever met Neil, but they're both new. So I think they both enjoyed it, especially Neil. He had a blast. But it was completely new cards, so not as... In my opinion, maybe not as friendly for newer players. That's something you got to take into consideration. Like, this is the recommended setup. We're not using character abilities either. Mm. And there's 6 characters. They all have an ability. And so I just wanted to play with different cards. So I just threw a bunch together. And, for the most part, we had a great time. But I think Chris had this complaint where... He thought maybe there were too many expansions included because so much was coming out. He didn't know, everything that was going on and what he could do with it, and what to look for exactly. And I'm wondering if that's just because this is his first time playing. Mm-hmm. Maybe the cards that were there weren't comboing as well as the mm-hmm. recommended setup. Or, I don't know, maybe there should be a lower... distribution of cards. I mean, we were three player. We played a 3-player game as well, yes. But would it be different with a 4 or 5 players,
Right. Yeah, I enjoyed that aspect of it is, focusing on a certain set of cards and buying from that set, hoping that they would interact and being confronted with a mechanic or a new type that you weren't sure quite how to use. I mean, I thought that was interesting, but especially if you're very analytical and want to plan things out, it can get a little frustrating mm-hmm. because you're presented with a lot to work with.
Yeah. But I don't know. He's definitely willing to give another try.
Yeah. It's definitely fun. I mean, even if you feel a little lost, that kind of inspires you to want to play it again. I mean, I think that's a real good motivation for the replayability of the game itself. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, if you play it again, what are some things you kind of want to see in future games, or what are some things you want to try in the future?
Yeah, I think the style that we played, we kind of did the tutorial tournament at the beginning with the pre-release, and I think getting right into the tournament would help me a lot because I didn't feel like I had included or accumulated enough cards to really be where I wanted to be by that third tournament. And I think that's probably a real important kind of satisfying part of that game is by your third tournament, you've got the best possible situation, the best possible deck, and the best thing you could come up with based on your money and your, you know, and the random randomization of the cards. And so, yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I think a real satisfying third tournament would be fun. Doing it that way.
Yeah. And also, we did the pre-release. Usually you would start off with the deck building.
Right.
No pre-release.
Mm, right.
So, I mean, like with the first play, with beginner players, it's almost essential to do a pre-release.
Yeah, it definitely is, because just understanding what you're even looking for, like what happens in a tournament and what you would possibly be looking for in a card pack is definitely important, because that would be pretty terrible to go in completely blind and have a useless deck.
Well, and the other thing is, we didn't use any character abilities either.
Mm, right.
Are you at all interested in trying those in the future?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, especially the card that I had was kind of a meta spy, so I could see the meta that was coming up and be able to kind of plan a little bit in advance and have a little bit of advantage, so that would be some extra points I could rely on, yeah, a little bit more for that character. Yeah, so that, yeah, I definitely think that will throw some interesting new balance issues into the game and make it more fun. And you'll have to play different characters different ways, you know, towards that the advantage of that ability.
Yeah. He can change, what's that, power creep? He can change the meta as well, you know, as
yes,
one of his
abilities. Right, right.
And something, I don't even know when I'll get to it. Now, this is level 99. They're known for adding lots of extra features and variants and ways to play their games. And, you know, one of the things they also included were locations. So each tournament, you flip over one of the location cards, and maybe you're riding on the back of ostriches, or maybe you're in like Tony's game store, or like maybe you're battling on top of a lava, you know, or like a rock in the center of like a lava arena, you know. And they all have like a special mechanic, like you have to play your first card randomly or something like that.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Oh, that would be very fun.
So I don't know. That might be some ways off, but I'd totally be down for playing it again.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Are there any things that you might do differently that you did before?
Yeah, I wasn't paying enough attention, I think, to a lot of the card tech. So once I kind of was getting how some of the mechanics worked and how I wanted to be scoring my RP, I missed things in parentheses like 30 points maximum and things like that. So when I weighted everything towards the use of a single card kind of at the end, then I was coming up really short points wise because I had to pay attention to the, you know, minimum and maximum for certain interactions.
Yeah.
That was my big downfall.
Well, you know, like the starter deck box have like a minimum of 30, but if you get the same deck box from the core set, it wouldn't have that minimum.
Oh, wow, nice.
Yeah. So yeah. I think like with multiple plays, you definitely know how to become a better player. Mm-hmm. I think there's definitely that, but
yeah,
there's so much variety.
Yeah, that's nice. And that would be nice to always have that surprise and always. One more thing that I thought was interesting is during the tournaments, the interaction between the players was just about perfect. Like there wasn't any way you could shut somebody completely down and totally invalidate their deck or totally, you know, stop every move that they made. So you kept having your deck kept working, and you know, people have like with their accessories, you know, some sort of defensive moves, but they don't have a lot of dispelling or defeating characters, so that you can all kind of gang up on one person in a, you know, three or four player game and kind of shut them down. I like that. I thought there was a good interaction. And
yeah, I think for the most part, definitely. I mean, like you might have those games where it's like, you know, multiplayer solitaire, but for the most part, I think there is a little bit of interactivity to make it interesting.
Mm-hmm.
The last game we played, though, there was this they had this anvil drop action.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, he found a dex box that gave all of his characters anvil drop. And what that does is when you use that action, it's like you drop it. It's like from Looney Tunes. It's like you drop an anvil on someone's head and it'll flip the card over. But you can choose any card.
Wow.
Not just your own, but like opponent. Yeah. So he's sitting there targeting my powerful characters. So in reaction to that, I had to go and look for accessories that defended me or prevented that from happening. So I did this thing where I found this construct, this robot, that I attached a card to it, and that any card of that element would be protected, wouldn't be able to flip. Mm. What happens? You just flip that guy. So I had an accessory that prevented him from being flipped. So it's just like, I had to like really think about that so I could pull off my grand scheme.
Wow.
But what ended up happening is like I had this one cool power play that I was saving for the end, and I didn't have enough star points to be able to pull it off. So that flopped. Lost that tournament, but that's okay. Wow. Speaking of that variety, that element, that always being surprised, there are more cards coming out. Promo sets come with bosses.
Oh, wow.
They come with two new playable characters. And the expansion comes with four more playable characters, a mini game, and a bunch of other sets you can include with your game, as well as a co-op mode, and I think a campaign mode. I don't know. There's all kinds of stuff being added to this. So
yeah,
I was really lucky to get one here, because it's just like, I feel like I might be the only person in Japan that has a copy right now.
Yeah, right. Well, I love the fact that all of these games are manufactured in China, and the shipping to Japan is sometimes insane.
Yeah, they gotta send it to the States, and then they gotta send it over here, right?
Right, yeah.
I know some people are able to work around that. They have like fulfillment centers in other places in the country, like Jamie Stegmaier's new game Scythe is being distributed from different locations all over the planet. I'm getting it from China, which should be here really soon.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Excellent.
All right. So any final thoughts on the game? Or?
I was pleasantly surprised by it. I didn't know what to expect. And you know, we had played Pixel Tactics previously, so I kind of knew, you know, about this company, and didn't know what to expect from this game, but it was really fun, and I would really recommend anybody that has any interest in, you know, either collectible card games or just kind of that whole thing. You know, there's some nostalgia from your childhood. There's a lot of great pop culture references. I mean, you draw some of the cards, and you know, great pop culture stuff, and yeah. So I think it's definitely worth trying, and a lot of fun to play.
Yeah. There's the lightning bug set with Captain Tight Pants.
Right.
Here comes Chris now. Maybe he can give his thoughts as well. Maybe he can talk to you about the things that he liked, the things that he disliked, the things he wants to see in future plays, and maybe things he'd like to see in future releases.
So to answer your question, Alan, I did not hate it. I actually liked it more than I thought I would, because, I mean, it's a game that is about... See our, you know, what? Collectible card game tournament. And I wasn't expecting to like it. Especially after, like, what felt like the hour-long info dump at the beginning of the game about how to play.
Oh, it wasn't that long, was it?
It felt that long. And I was like, oh, man, I'm just ready to either bail on this game or play. But, yeah, once you understood how to play, it was actually fairly simple. And, like, even with that first, because we did, what, a pre-release? Kind of, which is like, you kind of build your deck, or then you have like a little pre-release tournament, and then you only play two rounds of the tournament, which, like a full-length game, is actually three rounds. And we had the option to kind of reset everything after that pre-release, after we kind of had a feel for the game, which is actually part of the rules, which I guess I liked, because it's kind of like, okay, you've got a feel for the game, now let's reset, so you can kind of learn from your mistakes. But we just kind of chose to go on through. After the game, I told Alan that maybe limiting the number of expansions, cards in the game would maybe be a bit easier to learn. And like, I kind of didn't think why at first, but then part of my experience of actually playing kind of tournament level Magic was knowing the metagame and kind of knowing what decks to expect to face off against, where playing against the other players in Millennium Blades, there wasn't a whole lot you could do against their decks, but there was some interaction. But a lot of the game was having people explain what their cards were, because that was kind of the first time you saw them. And obviously, playing the game more would reduce that, but also reducing the number of expansions in the card pool would also, I feel, give you a better sense of what decks kind of were in the tournament. Like, and Alan said that reducing the number of expansion packs would mean you see a lot of the same cards over and over again, which, or there's less variety of cards.
You'd see more of the core cards, which are definitely a little bit more all over the place than the expansions.
Well, not only seeing the cards we played with or that got bought during the game, I felt the cards were all over the place to begin with. So, like, I really didn't get a feel for what the expansions were, and maybe they don't kind of have a feel, and it's just kind of whatever. But if the expansions are kind of focused around something, then, yeah, again, I feel kind of limiting the number of expansions in play would give you a better sense of what at least was out there. Because I never even looked at the aftermarket in terms of buying cards. I was just kind of, because that was just one more area of information to look at, which maybe I should have, but I was just kind of focused on the cards I was buying. So, again, I think it's kind of just limiting the amount of information where it didn't feel overwhelming to the point where I couldn't play, but that's probably because I was only focused on what was in my hand and pretty much ignored what other people were buying.
Mm-hmm. So no friendship points exchanged hands in that entire game?
Actually...
Not for me, no.
I gave Neil my friendship point for anvil dropping him instead of me.
Nice.
So... But Chris didn't want anybody's friendship. He made that apparent at the beginning of the game.
Because you're not there to make friends. You're there to win the freaking tournament.
It's through the power of unity that we shall succeed, my man.
Yeah, maybe. Again, that was just kind of like one more area where I'm just like, I'm just going to kind of focus on this part I feel I have a decent handle on, where I didn't trade with anybody. But again, that's because I wasn't really paying attention to what other people got or what other people were selling into the aftermarket. So it's not that I didn't want to make friends. It was just kind of, okay, let's just kind of focus on this, these cards in my hand.
Yeah. Do you think a second play or a third play you'd enjoy more, or you think it's still going to have that same kind of like, this is too much to sort?
Well, I didn't necessarily feel even on that first play, it was too much to sort.
Mm-hmm.
But again, as I said, maybe that's because I was
specifically
limiting it to not feel overwhelmed. But I don't know. There looked like there were a lot of cards in that stack we were playing with where I guess an upside is you might not see all the cards even after multiple plays.
Right,
so
right.
Things are fresh. But on the other hand, then it, to me at least, it would never really kind of emulate a tournament because you're never going to know what to expect.
Mm-hmm.
I did like the metagame, or the metagame cards, where that kind of... Yeah, rewarded people for having at least certain kinds of cards in their deck, where that, yeah, kind of pushed people to make certain choices, where as open information, you kind of knew what you might see element and type-wise.
Right.
Because
right.
I had no idea what, you know, the cards I would see were.
Right.
Well, with the metagame, you just need one of that type of card in there, so... But it's still kind of, everyone's going to try to include a soldier if it pops up. So
right.
I had this card that said, whenever someone plays a soldier, you know, get 15 points or something like that. So I'm like, oh, this is good timing. And then I ditched him the next tournament because no one played soldiers.
Hmm. Well, it does, like the changing metagame cards does encourage you to play different decks, essentially. Like I think Neil, the guy we were playing with, and Alan, changed their decks, if not drastically, kind of a lot from the different rounds. Where I, maybe it was because of the cards I was drawing, kind of kept the same idea. Like I ended up with the deck that got points for having face down or flipped cards, and cards that either flipped themselves or flipped other cards in the tableau for a bonus. And so I just kind of kept that idea and kind of kept the same deck where, again, maybe it was just the cards I kind of lucked into where it's like, hey, another card that flipped something face down. All right, I guess I'm using that.
Right. Yeah.
At the last one, I did try and include cards that were in the metagame to get those bonus points.
Well, you won that last tournament.
I did win that last tournament only because I didn't make a horrible play blunder like I did like the first
or like I did in the last tournament.
So there is that. I mean, there is building your deck and having that together and telling cards. But I do like how, even though you're not actually playing a CCG, there is kind of that combo element of how you lay down cards during the tournament that kind of emulate that a little bit, where like I made that not a horrible mistake, but I made a mistake and I'm like, oh man, that shouldn't have done that, you know, and I was being the stickler where like, nope, Alan, you said making mistakes is part of the rules and it says it right there, so let's no take backs, let's keep going.
Keep making that. Yeah.
So you just got like three dudes cursing the entire time throughout the tournament,
which is kind of tournament experience. Yeah, sure.
What kind of things do you think you want to see in like future expansions with this, or what you think they could add to it to make it more interesting?
I've given some of my, well, I like the arenas, the location cards. Yeah, something that added another element like that. So if you would have a meta and a location, and then, you know, potentially something. Well, how does the
your
boss,
player cards as well?
Yeah, your player card. How does the boss mechanic work? Do you know anything?
I don't know. Yeah. So they're coming out with these series of bosses, and I think they might just be part of the different store decks, or it might be part of the co-op mode. I'm not sure.
Okay. Yeah. So an additional thing that kind of made each tournament very different and put some players at a disadvantage, or kind of force you to change a strategy, I think would be fun.
Yeah. Also, I'm really excited about having more pro player cards, and they're also releasing more starter decks. So I think that's what you said. Like, so we did the pre-release and we're just playing with just the starter deck just to learn the game. So when you said that in the next tournament, how it changed drastically, that's because I pitched most of my starter deck. I just threw it in to get those collection points. So, you know, but it's nice to see more variety to the game. How you, each time, even at the start of the game, you're going to be a different character. You're going to have a different starter deck. And that's going to influence your strategy for the rest of the game.
What did you think of the kind of parody, the pop culture parody, and kind of the nod and wink to different...
I'm kind of mixed on that.
Yeah?
Like...
Like J-Dog Haxon?
Well, like, you showed that card, and I was like, it's supposed to be Jackson Howard. I'm like, oh, okay. But, like I honestly didn't find it that funny.
I'm not a Mad Magazine reader by any chance.
No, I'm not. And like, I got stuck with the Yu-Gi-Oh-esque kind of, you know, starter character guy, which didn't really matter since we weren't really playing with, you know, abilities. But I don't know. Like, part of me says, yeah, okay, you're kind of making fun of the whole collectible card game scene and tournament, and so you're, you know, gonna have these kind of, I guess, not even really Easter eggs, because they're not necessarily hidden, but it's kind of like, yeah, the pop culture references where maybe people will know what game or kind of thing you're making fun of, or maybe not.
Like Plumber Brothers.
Yeah.
Or Samurai Mowdown.
Yeah, Lightning Bug.
So
it's kind of like, on the one hand, I guess that's what their kind of their shtick is a little bit, and so you kind of keep it. But on the other hand, like, I felt the game had enough legs to kind of do its own thing, where I almost kind of felt that the pop culture stuff was detracting from the game a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like, one of the cards I pulled was like Walsh, right? Where it's supposed to be, okay, the Firefly character, right? I'm like, don't really need that, you know? So it's not that it, I don't know, maybe it didn't detract from the game, but at the same time, I'm like, this game works well enough on its own where you could actually put a serious, you know, kind of skin around it, or do your own kind of thing, and the game would still totally work and still be playable, and maybe might even be more enjoyable for people who kind of don't have all those pop culture references. But then at the same time, if you're kind of lampooning this whole card game tournament thing, isn't that what you're doing?
Alan, what's your opinion about that? Do you think that parody tone, I mean, do you think it's being respectful of that, those types of gamers, or do you think it is kind of, you know, making fun, just using that theme you know, kind of jokingly or kind of a little bit, you know, sarcastically about people that, you know, are involved in collectible card games?
Well, actually, I like the themes because I get a lot of them, but I've seen people talk about that before, how they weren't as into the silly art of it. They wanted something more serious. But I think a lot of times the references aren't mocking. They are definitely in homage to, I think. And they're silly, but, you know, if you're a fan of that genre, you get it and you enjoy it for the most part. I think even some of the musicians that we had, you know, when I got like John Lennon, you know, that's cute. Or you had a Michael Jackson card or something like that.
Something, yeah.
So I think for me, and I guess for, I saw some of the games that we played, it's always kind of fun where it's just like, hey, check it out, it's Michael Jackson or something like that. You know, they have a whole Shonen Jump series coming out soon, and they got like Michael Rufy or something like that, or I don't know. And he's like a hip hop guy.
No, I enjoyed Millennium Blades more than I thought I would, and it's, I don't know, it's tough to say if it's easy to pick up because there is a lot going on, and being an actual kind of CCG player, that I think that definitely helped, because even though it's not playing a CCG, it's kind of trying to emulate a CCG, and so stuff kind of makes sense. Yeah, I would be curious to know how easy it is for like a completely new player to pick up.
Yeah, I really only had casual collectible card game experience, so yeah, I didn't quite, you know, it's like, okay, there's a tournament, so what are we gonna do in a tournament? You know, like I really was like, you know, kind of that naive about how, what was being simulated there.
Right. Yeah. But even like, yeah, the tournament, actually like playing the cards to kind of emulate actually playing in a tournament, and then, you know, you have the collection area where, you know, you can turn this collection for money, and kind of the buying packs from the store and then selling these cards to the aftermarket. I mean, kind of being familiar with all that stuff from real life, it kind of made sense, if abstracted in the game way. I would play it again. Yeah,
man, let's give it another go. So the next time, so I told Jeremy, so we played the recommended setup, and with you, I did a bunch of like a random setup kind of. Would you, both of you all, like, would you like to do another random setup, or do you want to do like the recommended setup again, or what kind of things interest you for like a second play to get more familiar with the game?
Tough to say, because if Jeremy, you played with the recommended setup, like I didn't, I would kind of want to see what the recommended setup looked like so I could compare those experiences, but that would mean you would play the same thing.
Right. Well, I wouldn't mind either way. I mean, I would be interested to see if with more familiarity, I'd be able to build a better deck faster or kind of get to where I wanted to be faster. But I also really like the surprises and the randomness of it and just drawing cards from sets and being, oh, now what am I doing with this?
Right.
Yeah, that was fun too. So kind of both of those aspects I am still interested in, yeah, playing the game for.
Well, I think even with the recommended setup, you might still come across like new cards. Because there's a lot in there. And also, you know, we could do things like introduce player abilities. As well as just do a full game rather than the pre-release. Let's do it.
All right. Oh, for another game, yeah.
All right. Well, I think that's all we have to talk about. Is there anything else you think?
No, I think that's good.
All right.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
Thank you very much. Thank you for coming.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for listening, and we hope you come back for next time.
Bye.
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 Drive-through RPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week. And we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. Drive-through RPG. The one true source for RPGs. Road that makes
Idle Red Hands, recorded in Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.